welcome to The Lore You Know, a show where we chat with some amazing human beings who are storytellers, collectors, and folklorists as we discuss the history of, inspiration behind, and importance of recording and sharing regional tales. And let me tell you, there is no one better suited for this conversation than my guest today, Mr. Michael David Strayer. Thanks for coming on.
You're making me blush. That's nice. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I appreciate it.
I'm so excited that you're here. For people that may not be familiar with you, I want to say for a couple things. One, you have a really awesome podcast, which we can talk about in a second. Yep. But two, also, you are an author and you have one of your books, one of your, I have the other one around here somewhere too. But one through STM Publishing, The Curious Creatures, The Vegetable Man.
Yeah, because I think I was going to be on a podcast with you with Bally Raven, but I couldn't make it. Is that what happened? Maybe.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm glad to. Yeah. Yeah. That book's great. I've been getting that book out around town right now, getting out to the libraries and stuff. So I'm really excited about it. So yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, listeners. I'm Michael. Michael, like she said, I have a podcast. Called Moth Boys, which is we talk about weird alien encounters and cryptids and ghosts and we're silly about it, so some may say too silly, but we have fun. That's all that matters, I guess. So I have a podcast. I do a little writing. I do some children's books, The Curious Creatures, The Vegetable Man, and then Mothman Learns the ABCs, and then I'm working on Mothman Learns the Colors now, so there's another one coming out. And I've done, I've done a little book with my podcast called The White Monsters of Sherman, New York. And then I've written a little zine about Gray Barker and his, I've done a few things. And then for my work, I work with youth around West Virginia. I'm a mentor. So I go and hang out with them and I just kind of make sure they're all good and set with things in their life. And yeah. So it's a real fun job. So, and the job helps too, because I'm recording this podcast at, 2 p.m. So I'm able to make my own schedule. So it works. So, yeah. And I'm a daddy too. I'm a daddy. I want to point that out. I'm a proud daddy. Yes. I'm a proud moth daddy. So, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's me.
And you've got the awesome hat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do have that. Not this one. This is my camel hat. I should have worn my dad hat. Yeah, it's like my favorite hat. Yeah. I'm trying to use it sparingly now, because I feel like it's just going to fall apart pretty soon because I wear it so much. You know what I mean? So I want to keep it in a good, I want to preserve it correctly. So, yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
How old is your little one now?
Like around 1.5, maybe a little
one
older.
And a half.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So, yeah. He's starting to say no and yes, and it's really cool. He's saying letters and stuff and numbers. It's neat watching his little brain work. It's really nice. So yeah,
that's awesome. That's a fun time for sure.
It's also it's pretty frustrating too, still, because you see he still can't get out exactly what he wants, and he gets frustrated real easily. So but yeah, it is nice watching him learn, and but it's also, it can be frustrating because he knows he wants something, but he doesn't know how to get it out correctly without getting upset, so
That's what my one child, my son, my middle child, had issues talking for several years. But what we ended up doing was a little bit of sign language with him that seemed to help a little bit.
He does like does more and stuff, more. And it's really cute. It's good. So
that's
good.
Awesome. So one thing that you brought up about the books, which now I can't remember if this was technically before we started or after we did the intro, but you take your books that you've written and you go around to local libraries. Can you discuss a little bit the reasoning behind that, why you're going to libraries, the importance of it, and so on?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote Mothman Learns the ABCs first. That was my second one. And it wasn't about any kind of like money or like getting... I was really excited about getting my book into a library. That was like my big thing. You know what I mean? It's exciting to me.
Yeah.
Just to see, you're in the system. You got the little sticker wrapped around the spine of the book. I think that's exciting to me, So, and the fact that kids that can't afford books, I think, or the family can't afford books, they can go to a library and just get it out or read it at the library. That's really important to me, I think, especially, you know, this area, West Virginia, like where the books are take place, like Curious Creatures takes place in West Virginia. So I think it's important to have my book in those libraries just so people can have access to them. And yeah, so me and Danner have been, who was the illustrator of Moth Handler and Z ABCs, Conjure Dust Designs. We've been everywhere with Moth Handler and Z ABCs. I've been working on getting Curious Creatures out to other libraries too. And I've got it down pretty good locally. But I'm working on getting it out more. So yeah, I think it's important just to, I don't know. It's just, I made something and I want to put it out in the world. And, that's why. And I think I've always loved libraries. I think they're fun and it's not something I ever want to see go away either. So if I can help fill those libraries with something, I'll do that.
So what is the process like whenever you go to the library? You walk in with your book and you're like, hey, I have this awesome piece of literature that you must put on your shelves. Is that how that works?
It's kind of like that. I mean, it's sometimes I'll call ahead of time and just be like, is this okay if I bring it in? But for some of them, I'll just, you know, stop in and just chat up the librarian. It's all, you know, even if I haven't had a person turn me away yet. So that's good. I haven't had a person go, no, we don't want that here. So that's good. But it's always been like, you know, I'll call and ask, or I'll just show up with a couple copies of the book or whatever. And and usually they just take them. I mean, it's not, and then that's pretty much that. And then, you know, I've been offered, like, usually what happens after with some librarians, they'll ask me if I want to do a reading or like some kind, you know what I mean? They ask usually, which I haven't done a ton of, but I'm going to start doing them more often, doing readings at libraries and stuff, I think, because I've been asked a lot and it's a lot of fun, but I get real nervous doing that. So, cause I just did one for Halloween, they wanted me to come read Moth Handler and Z ABCs for the kids there. And that was a lot of fun. So, it takes minutes unless you want to talk to the librarian, but like you go hand in the books and they're like, oh, this is so cute. I like these books. And then they put them in their system and then, you know, it's there.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
So it's pretty easy. Awesome. It's just the driving to get to each, because they're kind of, you know, there's a lot of libraries in West Virginia. So like, but there's a lot of traveling and stuff. So, but
how many have you been to? Do you have an estimate?
I don't know. No, I don't know. I've been like, I haven't really hit the deep south of West Virginia, which I would like to do. Like I've been down to like Point Pleasant, probably Point Pleasant, and then straight across and above is where I've been in West Virginia. I haven't been below that really. So I would like to get down there sometime with the books, but I don't know how many. A lot though. Just here in Morgantown, there's like five or six libraries in itself. So I just learned that. I didn't know there was five or six. I thought it was like the Morgantown Library where I'm at, Morgantown. And then, but then I went to there's another one called the Cheat Lake Library. I guess there's like all these little other little libraries, which I didn't know about. So I'm trying to get all my books out to them too. And I've been doing that in the last couple of days. So yeah.
That's exciting.
It is exciting. It's very exciting.
So why did you start with children's books? Cause you've expanded beyond that. Like you said, you have, you even went into the zine genre, which is, it's just, I feel like that's a resurgence that's happening now. But why did you start with children's books?
Well, I've always worked with kids. It's kind of been my job, especially young kids. Before I lived here in West Virginia, I lived up in Pittsburgh, and I worked at the School for the Blind up there with like 5 and 6 year olds. You know what I mean? So that was a lot of fun. So and then before that, I've worked with the young kids. So I've always just had children's books around, and I'm like, I want to try to do that. You know, I've been around it my whole life. I know the process of doing it. You know what I mean? And you know, Yeah, it's always just, I've been always fascinated with the kids' books. There's some really good ones, some great children's books out there. And it's just working with kids and being around kids. And if it's nice, it's a little like, what's the word I'm trying to think of? It's like, I'm sure writing a book is cool, like a regular book, you know, but like, but then you get to like do the pictures and like it's there's a little bit more to it when it's a kid's book. So it's exciting. It's just fun. So yeah.
That's awesome. So you started with Mothman, which is one of the I would say argue like the most famous cryptid out of West Virginia if you throw Bigfoot out of there because he's everywhere.
Absolutely.
But why did you choose the Vegetable Man then for your second one? Because a lot of people don't know anything about the Vegetable
Man. They don't. And I mean, I think that's why I did it, because not a lot of people know it. And it's a scary case too. Like I don't think a lot of people know that it's based on like a real encounter. You know what I mean? So.
Right. You know?
That scares people. Yeah, I think it's one. I love the book. I'm obsessed with my own book. I think it's great. But like,
it is.
I don't know. Vegetable Man. I was thinking maybe I did like real mainstream. I did like the Mothman, and then my next book, I'd be like, okay, I'll do something like real obscure, maybe, and like get because there's no information about it, even like books or anything. If you look it up, like the only thing about it is a children's book. You know what I mean? So it's just very, it's really strange. I mean, there's other articles and stuff you can find, but I guess and it was also this obsession with like Gray Barker, who was a ufologist who was corresponding with the guy that saw Vegetable Man. I'm a fan of his, and so there was just a lot to it, and I just thought, you know, it was, and then Bally Raven, who did the art, the style she brought it in was so interesting looking, and so I'm just but I don't know why I have that in my head to do that next. I think I just like the story of the Vegetable Man, and I wanted to see it come to life in some form. So
Do you have another obscure cryptid that you're thinking about bringing to life?
I would like to do Grafton Monster. Yeah. Ooh, Grafton Monster would be cool. Yeah. It's another obscure one. Yeah. It's kind of like a one-off kind of. I mean, people said there's a few encounters, but everybody knows the main encounter of the creature. Mm-hmm. But what other ones would I like? I mean, Sheep Squatch is always cool. I mean,
yeah.
But I guess if you're talking, I guess it's not like obscure, but Loch Ness Monster would be really fun to do a book about. I think that could be a real cute kids book, you know. But I think Grafton Monster would probably be like the next obscure creature that I'd like to do. So
this reminds me of all the research that you've been doing beyond just writing. You've been you've been preserving the folklore of West Virginia in various ways. Mm-hmm. So what is your, like, do you have a folklorist that you're kind of like emulating what you're doing off of, or is this just all going by what just feels right? Like this is.
Yeah. It's all just, I'm just doing whatever feels right and whatever is pulling at me at the time. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I don't really have anybody to look up to, for this. It's just kind of like whatever's cool and whatever I think people would like to learn about, or whatever I like to learn about, most importantly. Right. You know, if I'm going to do something, I want to get something out of it too. So it's not, you know, I don't want to. So yeah, I just do things that I think that are neat, and West Virginia is a neat place, and it's got a lot of stories to it. So yeah, so I'm just trying to do my little part in keeping some things going. So
So you did with the Veggie Man, you wrote the first book officially about the Veggie Man, so you have that. And that was bringing, who's the guy that saw Vegetable Man again?
Jennings Frederick.
And have you done more research into his life?
A little bit, yeah, because I went to visit his grave a few times, and he's buried actually in Grafton, funny enough. Because he was a war hero, maybe something along the line, but he's buried in like a big old cemetery with a bunch of white crosses. But yeah, I've looked into him a little bit more, and he's had a lot more sightings than just the Vegetable Man. He's had a few encounters out there in Fairmont in that area. So, but yeah, I've done a little bit more research, and I haven't found out too much, but you know, I've went and found his grave, and I went and visited him a few times and showed him the book. And so that was nice. And other than that, I know that he and it all comes back to this great Barker guy, and like it because he was the one corresponding with him about Vegetable Man, and his family had seen things, and that's what I know about him, is that he's just been he's seen a bunch of weird stuff, and
And the zine that you just wrote was specifically about Gray Barker.
It was about, yeah, it was about different articles that I found enjoyable, that I like to read, and that I put them in a, like compiled them in a little zine. And I just, you know, I handed them out to people and like sent them out in the mail, and
I've got a copy.
Yeah, well, good.
I'm excited.
Did I send you one, or did you get it somewhere else?
You did. Okay, nope, good. You sent it to me.
I sent out so many. I can't even. There's a lot, like, and all over the world too. It was wild. People from Sweden and Ireland, just so many little places. But it was kind of just like I was going to visit. There's the archives in Clarksburg, the Gray Barker Archives, where it's essentially. It's all of this guy's stuff that he had, and the family sold it to the library in Clarksburg. So all of his work is in the is in his archives. So I was going to the archives. I don't know. I was interested in it, but I don't know. I didn't know I was going back and forth from, you know, Morgantown to Clarksburg. It's like 45 minutes. And I was like, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. I'm going every Wednesday. I'm getting the same lunch. They know my lunch order by heart now. And I go, I get over and I go I eat hot dogs, and I go to the library, and I go look up stuff about Gray Barker. And it's like it's his life in, like, it's probably 20 or 30 just giant drawers. It's like all just stuff.
Wow.
It's like a man's life. Yeah. So I just compiled, like, I would look through all the drawers, and I just compiled all my favorite things that I found. And then I realized, you know, what am I going to do with all this? Like all the stuff I photocopied and all these files I made. And so I worked with my friend, Andrew, at Strange Days Zine, which is another great zine about weird stuff. And he, you know, he said, let's do something with this. And, I was like, okay. So I sent all my favorite things, and he kind of set it up. I can't do any of that kind of stuff. So he like compiled it and made it, laid it out and everything. So it looks great. That's how that was very strange. It's all about him and some of the stories I like, or some of the encounters that he reported on and stuff. That's essentially what the zine is. So,
What are some of your favorite encounters?
From him?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like a Veggie Man, of course. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't think people realize this Gray Barker guy, he brought in a lot of stuff that people love these days. You know, he did Vegetable Man, he did Grafton Monster, Flatwoods Monster, the Mothman, Philadelphia Experiment. He did Men in Black. He pretty much coined the term Men in Black. So I mean, this without Gray, this is kind of like, I don't know, a lot of these things wouldn't be around, you know. So So a lot of these things he reported on. He was like the second on scene for Flatwoods Monster. A lot of this stuff, like, you know, comes. And then Mothman, he wrote a book about Mothman before John Keel even did. It came out like 3 or 4 years before Mothman Prophecies did, called The Silver Bridge. He doesn't get too much credit. He was a prankster. He was kind of a hoaxer. So that's why people don't really, but, you know, he was doing, which is understandable, but he's also like, he was also doing cool stuff though, you know? So my favorite encounters are probably that, obviously Flatwoods Monster, I think, is awesome. What other ones? I would say that I like the correspondence between Robert Cockrell and Gray Barker for Grafton Monster. Is probably my favorite thing to read. I think that's interesting. They had like a little back and forth together, and that was probably my favorite. And there's also one called the Lost Creek, a saucer sighting, which is essentially it was him and his friend, and then another guy who faked a UFO sighting, and they recorded it. They took a fake UFO and they put it on a fishing rod with some string, and they held it up and like made it look like it was like floating in the air, and they recorded it, and then they toured on it. They like did events, presented. I know it's a little maddening, but I also think it's a little funny to me too. But he did like a tour. They did a tour where, like, you know, he'd show it to this crowd, and they'd all be like, "Oh wow, holy moly, look at this footage this guy got." And it was they have like the little wooden piece in the library that he used to like record that make this fake. So it's just that's the Lost Creek, West Virginia footage. That's like right outside, but it's outside like Braxton County and Flatwoods and stuff. But so I think that case is kind of funny. But yeah. Yeah, the main ones are like Veggie Man and Grafton Monster and Flatwoods Monster. Those are probably my favorites. Sure.
Have you thought about, well, now that you've had a taste of making a zine, does that seem like another avenue that you'd like to take in the future to make another zine of some sort?
Yeah, I was thinking, I really would like to work on a zine about a woman named Mary Heyer, who was a part of the Mothman case. She was a big part and nobody knows her name. I like to go for the, I like the underdogs. You know what I mean? I like John Keel and everything. He's great, but everybody knows John Keel's name. You know what I mean? We need to bring up other people that were part of these things around that time. You know, Mary Heyer was a woman who reported on a lot of the Mothman and UFO sightings around that time. She was a reporter and like a manager at the Athens Messenger, which was in downtown Point Pleasant. She had a week, I don't know if it was weekly, it was a column she put out called Where the Waters Mingle. And she talked a lot about the weird lights in the sky and Mothman sightings. And then I think she became friends with John Keel, and that's how he became knowledgeable of it too. So I think I don't know if she was the first one to really, she might've been the first one to like report on all that weird stuff happening in Point Pleasant. So I think she needs more praise. You know what I mean? So I'm thinking about doing something. Yeah. I think something with her would be fun. Just kind of maybe doing a compilation of Where the Waters Mingle. So people can have that would be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Just to read about. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. That would be fun for sure. Mm-hmm. Where is she? And you just recently found her headstone. Mm-hmm. Where is she buried?
She is, it's in Point Pleasant. I forgot the name of the cemetery. It took a while. I went with a buddy named Dusty, who's part of the Mothman Museum. He works there, at times. We went out and we had to search for I think it was because the way that the cemetery was lined up wasn't making sense in my head. So we had to search for a while. But we found it, and there was no flowers on it, so we put some flowers on there, and it was real. It was really cool. But I don't remember the name of the cemetery. I wish I did. But I would like people to go visit more.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but
you can put it in the zine.
There you go. That's right. Be there. That's officially. A good idea. That's a good idea. Yeah. That's a really good idea.
Now there was another video that you posted recently with Andrew Smith from the Flatwoods Moss Museum.
Yeah.
Whose headstone was that again that you went and found?
That was Gray Barker.
Like literally in the woods.
You park. So here's the thing. Like you go up this long driveway and then you have to park at somebody's house essentially. And then you have to walk in through their lawn. And they have a bunch of farm animals and stuff. So there's pigs and ducks and geese. I got attacked by geese a bunch of times. they follow you, but you have to walk behind their house. And, it's really funny because you have to because they came out and we're like, hey, what's going on? What are you doing? And we're like, oh, we're just here for the Barker Cemetery. We heard it's back here. And, you have to walk behind their house and you walk probably, it's about a half mile probably back there. Mm-hmm. You walk it deep into the woods and it's just a fenced off area and it's out in the woods. I mean, it's I don't know. I don't know how they got bodies up there. I mean, I think it was a road at one time, that the part that goes by their house. So I think it was a road at one time, or some kind of road. It's in the woods. It's wild. It's really neat. But me and Andrew went back there and found it because that's something we had been talking about for a while. And a lot of people are wondering where his burial site is, and it's hard to get out there. So and not a lot of people go out there. So
yeah. Well, just having this park at someone's house would be intimidating enough.
It's hard, especially when there's a bunch of farm animals, and it's kind of like a junkyard almost too, because there's cars everywhere, and you're parking at some. It's like a garage. I think it's somebody works out of a garage there, repairing cars. But they were friendly. The people that we met were friendly enough, and they said, "Yeah, just park off the driveway." And so it was nice. It was real weird the first time, because I've been up there a couple times since then. That first time was oh man, are these people gonna hate us? I was really nervous, but it's also if they have nothing to do with the cemetery in the back either, it's not their thing. So Yeah. So it was really, really interesting walking in there with Andrew for the first time, and just, it was all muddy too back there. So like we were getting all muddy. It was just a real boys trip. It was a lot of fun. We were like, you know, we were having fun and joking around, and, but yeah, it was fun.
That does sound like fun. And, yeah. I imagine that it's probably not being taken care of then if it's out in the middle of
No, not at all. Not at all. It was all overgrown. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, and then what I noticed when I was out there is a lot of little babies out there. There's a lot of little, which is sad to me, you know, tiny kids. Mm-hmm. So I went out. So me and Andrew went out, and then, I went back eventually with like a weed whacker and like a pair of hand clippers, and like, you know, just was like, I'm ready to go to work. Just, I want to clean out the cemetery.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
At first I was like, I'll go clean off like Gray's little grave or whatever. But then I'm like, yeah, I feel bad for all these people. This is like, you know, because
right,
I hit up some of the family members of Gray Barker, like they're like extended family now at this point. And I hit them up and I'm like, would you guys mind if I go clean that out or anything? They're like, yeah, we don't care. Like the person that used to clean it out can't make it back there anymore. Understandably, right. It's like a nightmare getting back there sometimes.
Right.
But so I went back there, and that the weeds were higher than I'm 6'2", and like they were almost as high as I was, the weeds.
Oh,
so
my.
Like I, yeah, it was wild. So, and yeah, so my weed whacker was just useless. So I just took my hand clippers, and I spent like 4 hours up there just clipping all these weeds down. Just, and I still want to go back up and do some more work. There's still more work to be done. And I told the family, if you need somebody to take care of the cemetery, I'll go up once a month or something to take care of it. And so you guys don't, you know,
yeah,
I'll take care of your dead or whatever, you know, instead
yeah.
of mine. Yeah. So, I went up on a Saturday and a Sunday. So it was 4 hours one day and then like an hour and a half the next day. So mm-hmm. like 5.5 hours, and it's mostly cleared out. I did pretty good. But I'd like to get back up there and do some more work. So
yeah,
but yeah, it's, you can definitely see, I was finding new headstones as I was cleaning too. Like I would clear I would clear out a spot, and you know, I'd find a new headstone, and you know, I found a whole bunch laying under all this stuff.
Oh,
so
man.
Yeah.
Do you use findagrave.com to search?
I have before.
Because the first thing that came to my mind when you said you found new headstones is those need to be put in the database.
That's a good idea. I didn't even think about that. Unless they're already in there, some of the headstones in that graveyard were old, you know, some mm-hmm. some just had like names like scratched into them, not even like dates or anything, just like,
right,
yeah, some wild stuff up there. So wow. Yeah, so I was there initially for Gray Barker's grave just to visit, and but then I was like, oh man, I should just help everybody out here. I mean, it's not that,
yeah,
it's not huge, right? I mean, it's pretty big, but like it's weird because one side of the cemetery has a bunch of overgrowth, and the other mm-hmm. side doesn't grow at all. I don't know what it is. It just doesn't grow there. So I'm not sure if the soil is different or something, but
yeah. Well, that's cool, because now that you've been there and started the cleaning out process, you've mm-hmm. helped preserve everyone else in that cemetery. So that's
exactly. Really awesome. Yeah, I found out that Gray Barker, his mom and dad are there too. So
oh, wow.
We found them. So yeah, that feels good. I mean,
yeah,
it feels nice doing that. Cause I was like, even to myself, sometimes I'll do things and I'll go, what am I doing? Like, what am I? I'll have a Saturday free and like, this is what I'm going to go do. And you know, yeah, it's just something I felt was right. So I made it happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm excited to hear that. I love that. I know I enjoyed watching after and I do not know the name of the man, so please forgive me, but the Grafton Monster Witness.
Robert Cockrell.
Okay. You went to his his calling hours, right? Or his funeral?
Yeah, it wasn't his funeral. No, it was his funeral. Or was it? I can't remember if it was his funeral or like the I don't know. It was the thing. So he got into the car right after.
Yeah.
Is that the funeral?
Yeah. That's okay. The one that I'm remembering.
I always get confused. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like the funeral procession.
Procession. Yes. Oops. Yes. So I went to that and I kind of just like, I went to visit and I heard that was going on, and I always liked his story. I thought it was cool, you know? So mm-hmm. I went and sat in the back, and I didn't want to bother nobody. I just kind of sat in the back, and then, you know, once they walked him off, I kind of just took off. You know, I didn't want to be I felt like it was mostly like, it looked like it was like mostly family and friends. I was just kind of there just right. to, just to pay my respects to him and his family, but I didn't want to be a bother. So after that, I went down to the spot where he saw, supposedly the spot where he saw the Grafton Monster, or close to it. And it turned out the procession was coming down the road. Like I you know, I was just doing this video. I was making this video just saying how cool it was. And like, you know, just talk, because I had his number and his like his address for a little while. And I never hit him up to talk to him. And then he passed away. So I was like, oh, that was a missed opportunity. And I was just telling people to like, you know, reach out to people and talk to people. They, you know, they might be more willing than you think to talk about things, you know. But I was pretty upset about that. And that's why I went to the funeral, because I was just to feel better about it, you know, just that I didn't get to talk to him, and you know, but so yeah, I was sitting there and I look up and this, you know, his funeral procession is going right down the street where his, you know, his, where he saw the creature, which is kind of cool, you know, and you know, I waved at the hearse and everything and, you know, said bye and stuff. And yeah, it was a really nice moment to be right there where he saw this creature, and also, you know, making his last drive down that road, you know, for his last time, you know what I mean? So yeah, it was really, it was something else. So yeah.
That's really awesome. Have you talked with any of his family since then?
No, I mean, I talked to them after. I felt like after his funeral, I was like, I want to do something for the family a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I commissioned Danner from Conjured Designs.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's just this picture of a little hearse driving down the road and, you know, the Grafton Monster is waving and saying, you know, thank you or whatever, just to him. That was last time I talked to him. I sent them all prints of the poster, and they really enjoyed that. There was a few of the family members that changed their picture to that picture of, like, it was really sweet. So, but so that's the last time I talked to any of them. So I think his wife is still around. Maybe I'll talk to her someday. I don't know, but
yeah. Oh man, it sounds like that needs to be your next children's book.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think it should be. Yeah. And it's a cool story too, you know. There was like a whole monster hunt, and like there was a lot to it, you know what I mean? So
Yeah. Well, what can you go over the story of the Grafton Monster for us real quick? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can. So a man was coming home from work, and he was in Grafton, West Virginia, obviously, and he was going down a road called Riverside Drive. And so he was coming around a bend, and you know, he sees this big mass on the side of the road, or you know, something, and he kind of slows down to look at it, and he sees it's a living, breathing thing. It's like a big mass. It's white. He said it was white, all white, seal like skin, so like kind of rubbery almost or something. Mm-hmm. And he said it had no head, so whatever it was just a mass, just like a, yeah, it's wild. And then when he noticed it was a living, breathing thing, it was, you know, it was moving or whatever, you know, he sped off down the road, and he went and got a couple of his buddies, and they went back to the site where he saw it, and they saw where the creature was sitting was all matted down. The grass was all like matted down and stuff, but they didn't see it. They didn't see anything. They did hear some weird whistling from the water, because this Riverside Drive runs next to a river. So they said they heard some whistling out in the water out that way. But the week after that, the whole week was like there was a monster hunt. That whole street was lined with cars and people with bats and chains and teenagers with, like, you know, just trying to hunt this creature down. So.
Sure.
I love that image of an actual monster hunt happening. You don't hear about that, you know what I mean? So like there's this whole big long street lined up with all these cool old cars, and people just want to kill this creature for some reason. I don't know why. Because they do. I don't know. It didn't even do anything. But it was innocent. But yeah, so that's the story. I mean, some of the people that were on the monster hunt said they saw a creature. But mostly it's mostly just that. It was mostly just that one time. So yeah, I like that story a lot. I like the whole monster hunt aspect, and I like, you know, he was kind of spooked out of his mind, but then he went back, you know what I mean? I think he realized. Yeah. And then he tried to explain it to the paper that he worked at. They ran an article, but it was real like smart alecky, kind of like a fever dream or like a, you know, it was like some like weird, like some like he's seeing stuff type thing. So
yeah, he may have been drinking, we don't know.
Yeah, exactly, something like that. Yeah, so
yeah,
I do know that the guys that run the Grafted Monster Facebook, they sent him a sticker, I guess, at one point, and I guess he put it up at work or something. He has a Grafted Monster sticker. So I don't think that he liked the story, obviously. And his one of his family members who I was talking to was obsessed with the story, and you know, she would always talk to him about it and stuff. So yeah
that's awesome. I was looking around my desk, I've got a little Grafted Monster here from
that's cool,
one of the Cryptid Crate Juniors.
Oh yeah, can you put that a little closer? Let me see, can you put it closer? Can I see it? Oh, that looks that's what I imagine, kind of just like a big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like a football player. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Headless football player.
Yep.
Oh, I forget what I was going to say now. I just totally lost it. So, obviously, you know where he is buried then. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and that's being taken care of because he was just recently passed away. But what decade was that?
For Robert?
Yeah.
Or who? I don't know where he's buried, actually.
You don't? It would be close.
I haven't been. It was close because I didn't, because that procession went by as I was standing there, and I didn't want to like go and like bother them or anything. So I haven't went out and searched out yet for him. So I mean, that'll be my next thing. But yeah, I know that he lived in, and that was the thing when I talk about regret, like I'm going to go back and talk about regret and not doing something or reaching out to somebody. He lived when I found out his address and number and all that, and he lived like not even 5 minutes from me. Like he was in Morgantown, you know what I mean? So like, yeah, it was like a real like heartbreaker, you know what I mean? But and that's why I was so bummed out that day. Then when he passed away that whole week or before the funeral, whatever that time frame was, I was just so bummed out. My wife was like, you know, what do we need to do to, you know, get your spirits up? And I was like, I need to go to the funeral. I think I need just to say a goodbye, even though I didn't know the guy. But so I haven't been to his grave yet. I would like to go. I probably will go. I mean, soon enough.
Now, do you have anybody else on your list that you want to talk to but haven't yet? Or have you been able to do that as far as talking to somebody as soon as it? Was he the last one?
He was kind of. That's another reason I was kind of bummed out. All these people are starting to die out. You know what I mean? All these all these classic stories. I don't think anybody from like the Scarberries or Mallettes from Mothman, the original people. I don't know if any of those people are still alive or not. I don't have anybody on my list that I like talking to some of the family members of these people, just reaching out. And if they're willing to talk to me, I'll talk to them. It's kind of interesting just to talk with some family. And I've given some books out to like Jennings, Frederick's family and stuff. The Curious Creatures book. I've given some of the books out to them and stuff. But I don't have anybody on my list right now to really talk to. Maybe the wife of Robert Cockrell, just to say, tell her how much his story means to me. Maybe not, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, I don't really have anybody I need to reach out to right now, I don't think.
Yeah. Cause that's, if you think about it, like that, like you're saying that generation is passing away that had those stories. Mm-hmm. And if we don't write them down now, they're lost, obviously.
Yep, absolutely.
Which
is a bummer, you know, and then,
yes,
not enough people are reaching out to these people either, you know. And if I would have known that this guy was going to pass away, I would have reached out, you know. I would have, but I was nervous, and that's just what happens sometimes, and that's all you can, that just happens, you know what I mean? So
I think everybody has a story like that with someone in their life.
That's kind of like that's why we did that, our new book, the Moth Boys did the White Monsters of Sherman, New York, which was a case back in the 60s. About a man who was seeing giant ground sloths, white albino, in his backyard, in his and just these huge creatures. And that was like, that's where we grew up. Like it's a little place called Sherman. We grew up like 10 minutes from there. So that was like, we grew up reading about that story. And like, we actually found the guy because he wrote an anonymous letter to John Keel, and then John Keel put it in a book. And that was all the information he had, was this guy, this kid was seeing these creatures. and John Keel put it in one of his books, and that was that. And then so through some weird, we did chat boards and emails and all kinds of stuff. We finally found the guy that saw these creatures, and he lives in Ohio now. So
awesome.
Anyway, I get to talk to him a lot, which is nice. And this is it's like our own little cryptid that we have that we're trying to, we'd like to get it out more, you know. So it's cool. They're giant sloth. He's seen these things multiple times, and his family has seen them a bunch of times too. So it's neat just to, it's our own little thing that we've kind of found out, but we're trying to get out into the world, but it's special to us. And so I get to talk to him and stuff, which is really neat. So I'll text him every once in a while and talk to him. So
that's so awesome. That detective work that you must have done to find him.
It was half parts like real detective work and half part just me being like an internet creep, kind of, you know, just being just like searching and adding everybody with his last name in the town, you know. So we did it though. I mean, somehow like we just took, I don't even know how, because his name wasn't in the book, nothing. We just kind of, we went on a message board, and years ago this guy had wrote on the message board, I think this was me writing the letters, and he had like John G as his name. So that's all we had.
So you're like, all right.
Yeah, we have a John G.
John G.
Yeah. He was living in Ohio. So that's what we had to go on. So, so we did it. I mean, it worked, and we made this little book about it. And it's, you know, it's a neat little, and my friend Jonathan Dodd did the illustrations of all the encounters and stuff. And, and there's an interview. There's interviews in the book. And then there's like, we went and hung out in Sherman, and he showed us all the spots. And so we took pictures of that. So that's how we wanted to keep that alive, that story, you know, our way in to keep that story going. And we went around Chautauqua County where it happened, and we handed out all the books to them too. So there was like 24 or 25 libraries just in our little county that we lived in or grew up in. So we had to, we took 2 days for us to drive all around the county just handing out the book. So that was a lot of fun. That was cool. And a lot of people hadn't heard about it, so like they're all fascinated and stuff. So that was really neat. So
You said you grew up hearing about it. How did you hear about it?
Well, I guess I didn't grow up. It was more like I was a teenager type thing. It was more like I had heard about Mothman Prophecies and then checked out one of his other books. He has this book of just like random encounters and stuff. I forget the name of it. I always forget. Strange Creatures. I always forget the name of it. But that's how I found out. Like Sherman, New York's like, it's my backyard. That's like, I can drive, you can go there now and hang out. And it's like nothing there, but like, we can go hang out there. But that's how we found out about it. It's just, I guess I wasn't really growing up. It was more like I was a teenager, probably 15 and 16, 17, something like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but now we always wanted to find out if we could do anything with it, but it didn't.
Yeah.
It took up until recently for us to get going. So.
Yeah, but you did it and it turned out awesome.
It is. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
And it's been received well. So
It's doing pretty well. I mean, if people can't afford to buy a copy, we just give them a copy. I mean, at the end of the day, we want this story to get out. And this man's, that was the thing. We did like a group chat when we all first met with John. His name is John Goodwill. He's the guy that saw the creatures. And we did a group chat, and, you know, he was real nice. He's a real sweet guy. So he's just a sweetheart. And we all were chatting, and he's like, man, I appreciate any work you guys want to do towards this. And, you know, I don't know what's going to happen to me, you know, tomorrow or the next day. You know, this could be, my story could be lost forever. You know, and then that really got to me. That hit me in the heart. And I was like, man, I just want to get this guy's story out. You know what I mean? So, so like people that look at it at our table, sometimes like the Moth Boys table, and they, you know, they look at it, pick it up, and, you know, and if that, you know, I just, sometimes I'll just give him a copy and be like, I just want to get this guy's story out. You know what I mean? It doesn't cost that much to make the copies of this. So I'll just, it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, that's the bigger thing. I'm just trying to get this guy's story out. I've been trying to reach out to anybody I can send it to that wants it. It's just important to me to know that it's important to me that he knows that we're doing our best to get his story out there, because that's what he wants. So, and that makes me happy helping somebody like that. So,
You're doing a great job.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, this is toward the end of the show, and at the end of every show I always ask people to tell me a story.
Okay.
So do you have a story off the top of your head, some sort of folklore story that you've always really liked? Or you could just tell us the Veggie Man tale.
Veggie Man tale. Okay.
Rather.
Yeah, the Veggie Man tale is cool. I'll do that one. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a lot of fun.
Alrighty.
Yeah. So a guy was out woodchuck hunting one day. His name was Jennings Frederick, and he lived in the Fairmont / Reeves. I recently found out that it wasn't just strictly Fairmont. It was like an area called Reevesville too. So it's Fairmont Reevesville area. Okay. He lived there. He was out woodchuck hunting, and he stops and he hears this weird noise, like a high pitched like recorder or like, you know, a record being played quickly or something. And so he looks around and he's like, "What the heck is that? What the heck is that noise?" And this thing jumps out at him. This creature, it jumps out of the bushes or whatever, and it looks like a giant stalk of green, like a veggie, like some kind of weird vegetable or something. It's just a greenish, like a stalk of some kind, you know what I mean? Like, and this creature, you know, telepathically tells this man that he needs help. He comes in peace, essentially. I'm not gonna harm you or whatever. And then, you know, as I think he goes to turn away and run, this creature lunges at him and takes, he's got these like these needle fingers, this creature does, and it like goes into his arm, and there's also suction cups on his fingers too, so this creature starts siphoning blood from this man's arm. And like, you know, the guy's freaking out. He's like, "What the heck is this thing doing to me?" But then, you know, it's painful. He said he could really feel those needles in his arms siphoning blood into his hand, or into the creature was siphoning blood, you know. And so he looked in the creature's eyes, and they were like different colors, like swirling, and like they were hypnotizing him. And he said he didn't feel any pain. So this thing was like taking his blood and like using some kind of like, I don't know, some kind of like hypnosis or something, and you know, to take away the pain. It was taking his mind off. So, you know, it sucked the blood out of the man, and it desuctioned or declawed, or, you know, took his claws out of his arms, and it hopped up the hill. He said it was hopping up the hill, like ran away. And then and then a few minutes after the encounter happened, he heard some kind of like whirring noise, like a startup of an engine of some kind, which he was led to believe that was some kind of craft that was taking off. So I guess this creature thrives on human blood or something. I don't know. I don't know. But I don't know if it was a few days before or like a little while before, Jennings' mother had an encounter too. Not the same kind of creature, but something similar. The creature landed in their lawn, and she went out and watched it out of their front. I forgot her name, Jennings' mother's, but she was watching it out the front window. And this creature, the craft landed, and the creature came out, and it was attached to this ship, like a string was attached to it, and it was like I don't know if it was pulling up grass or something. It was like pulling stuff up, and then it would collect it, and then it walked it back into the ship. And then took off, I guess. Yeah. So that's a story not a lot of people know about, but that was reported by Gray Barker as told by Jennings Frederick. His mother saw this weird creature pulling grass out, putting it in a basket and leaving. So I don't know if it was the same kind of creature. I don't know what, but yeah. So there's a little bit more to that than I think. Yeah, just a blood sucking creature. It's wild. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And it makes for an excellent children's book.
It does. It does. It's wild. I love it. I love it so much.
Yes, it's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and spending time with me and talking about all the cool stuff you're doing.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. I'm having fun doing it, and it's helping. It's helping. And that's good. I think, you know, I think that's,
you're doing great.
I'm having a good time. And so I thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Could you tell our listeners where they could find you and follow your work?
On Instagram's Moth Boys Podcast, and then Facebook Moth Boys, the same thing. You'll be able to just go to Google and type in Moth Boys Podcast. We're on all the Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all that nonsense. We're everywhere. Just type in our name, and we're we're like a plague, kind of, you know. Yeah, we're everywhere. But yeah, that'd be cool. I'm gonna try to print up another run of the Gray Barker zine. So if you'd be interested in a Gray Barker zine, just reach out to us on social media on Moth Boys, and I'll send you one, because I've been sending them out to people just free of charge, just getting the word out. And I don't want to make money off his work, really. So I've just been sending the zine out that people are interested. So if you're interested in one and don't want to spend money, but you want a cool little zine, yeah, you can hit us up and we'll get you one.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Oh, well, everybody, thanks for listening. If you need to get in contact with me, it's Heather@smalltownmonsters.com. Obviously rate and review this podcast wherever you're listening to it. And squad members, thanks for joining us in video format. That's always awesome. And until next time.
The Lore You Know is presented by the Small Town Monsters Broadcasting Network. You can find out more about this and other network shows, as well as Small Town Monsters films, books, our upcoming Kickstarter campaign, and much more at smalltownmonsters.com. If you enjoyed this show, consider giving it a like, rating, review, or sharing it with a friend. And be sure to tune in next time for another episode of The Lore You Know.